Log Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm going to speak a little bit this evening in general terms about Billy Meier, about the Billy Meier case and what it's all about before we dive into the actual topics this evening. Edward Albert Meier is a very interesting individual. He lives in a little town in Switzerland. It's called Hinterschmidt-Bruti. It's a tiny mountain village. It's about 52 miles east of Zurich. And he grew up in Switzerland. He grew up in an area called Bulach, Switzerland. When he was a very small boy, he started to see extraterrestrial craft. Him and his father, one particular day, saw some 300-meter disc that hovered near the steeple of his church in Bulach, Switzerland. And then Billy started getting these telepathic messages, these mental images, and he would go out into the forest and play, and he would get these messages from this man named Svoth. Svoth was an extraterrestrial human of about 1,000 years old, and he would contact Billy in this way, and eventually he even landed his silvery pear-shaped craft out in the field, and he brought Billy up into his ship, and he told Billy some very incredible things, that he was told that his spirit form had incarnated on the earth at least some six other times, that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught a very ancient and universal teaching that the Meier information refers to as the teaching of the spirit. And the teaching of the spirit deals with about six or seven different topics from what I can see. It talks about something called the universal consciousness, which the Meier information is very emphatic, shouldn't be thought of in our religious terms of God. But the universal consciousness instead is a neutral positive entity. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution, and it radiates love. In fact, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And this superintelligence created everything in our universe, and it radiates love. And love is considered the primary creational natural law, not a love based on romantic notions and romantic thoughts, but a wisdom conditioned love that understands that we exist as a part of everything. And we should have a philosophy not of live and let live, but live and help live. And we should have an incredible respect and venerability towards life. And there's this wonderful paragraph in one of Billy's writings. And this book is called The Goblet of Truth. And this paragraph's entitled, What the Truth Knows to Say. And it goes on and explains that rivers, stones, lakes, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage into the world of pure spirit. And that we live many, many, many lifetimes. And all of the creatures in creation are connected by psychic vibrations and psychic swinging waves that come from the spiritual consciousness into the material. And if you go into the forest, you can start to get a better understanding of creation. You can hear the birds and the crickets and the cicadas as they communicate. Because many of these creations, these creatures, they're aware of each other and they're connected. Now, the purpose of our life in these many lifetimes that we live is something called the evolution of our consciousness. We have a consciousness, a subconsciousness, and an unconsciousness. And all aspects of our consciousness actually produce thoughts. And our thoughts have an incredible power. And the book Macht der Gedanken is about learning to harness the power of our own thoughts. Because with the power of our own thoughts, we can control the circumstances of our lives. We are not the victim of the circumstances of our lives, but we can control the circumstances of our lives by learning to direct our thoughts. And our thoughts should be neutral positive, not too positive and certainly not negative, but neutral positive. Good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings lead to neutral positive habits, good habits, and these good habits lead to the good circumstances of our life. So you are the master of your own luck. You're the master of the own circumstances of your life. There's an incredible power associated with our thinking, and don't underestimate that thinking. Because our spirit form, which is the real you, which is the part of you that lasts essentially forever, is, you could think of it as a tiny fragment of this universal consciousness that our religions have erroneously called God. But this tiny fragment is connected to the most powerful and most intelligent and most incredible energy and intelligence in this universe. So your limitations only come from you. So we need to learn to steer our thoughts and not to let our thoughts drift in an uncontrolled way, and do not let your thoughts fall into negativity. Because if your thoughts go into negativity, they can rotate in negativity, and you can be lost in your own thoughts of negativity, and they repeat and they repeat and they loop and they loop and they come back and they come back, and they literally make you miserable, make you insane, and they'll put you in a state of being unsatisfied. And when you're in a state of unsatisfaction, you'll lose all your motivation, you'll lose all your energy, you'll lose all your creativity. Don't let that happen. Now, we need to learn to clarify our thoughts. And my own idea is that the universal consciousness, when it created all the beauty and incredible splendor of nature, you know, the Meyer information says that the beauty of nature, the incredible splendor of nature, is the visible expression of the love of creation. Creation radiates love, and you can learn to feel it. You can learn to sense that radiating love of creation. But you'll have to learn to calm your thoughts and go into a neutral positive state, and you'll have to learn to be observant. And it's easiest to feel the radiating love of creation in nature. And if you'll concentrate and you'll relax and be neutral positive, you can feel what's called, you can have empfinden in German, and you can feel the radiating love of creation. Because creation radiates love. In fact, the universe is sending signals all the time because it wants to come into harmonious concord with all people, all living things. And that's why it radiates love. You know, these signals come from the storage banks. There are universal storage banks, and they radiate these signals. And Billy, as a very young boy, woke up at 3 a.m. one morning. And this is before he had any extraterrestrial kind of contact. And he crawled out a lower window in his bedroom. It was a beautiful, warm May evening. And he looked up at a beautiful starry sky. And he said that my life exists because of the love of creation. And the creation radiates love. And he could see the visible spectrum of light produced by the stars, but he was sensing this invisible light that he called the love of creation. And he heard his own voice say, "Since ancient times, I lived among the stars." And he felt this unfamiliar longing for the vast distances and the strange worlds. And he was filled with memories, many memories. And he also felt he knew the purpose of his life then. It was a truly, he had an epiphany as a very, very small boy. And then he went to the pastor of the local church there, Pastor Rudolf Zimmerman, and he asked him about this experience because he couldn't explain it to anyone else. And no one else understood. And Pastor Zimmerman told him about telepathy and that in addition to these impulses from creation, that he would probably be getting these telepathic messages, which he did. And he met with Spoth, and Spoth started to prepare him for his time as a teacher, even though in these previous lifetimes he had done the same thing. And Spoth put a device on his head that opened up his subconscious, that allowed him to tap into the wisdom of his predecessor personalities. And that's when he started to see future events very clearly. And he had an incredible experience on Spoth's ship. He saw the beautiful blue earth far below, and Spoth told him that his life would be difficult and that he would be a prophet and that he would teach this ancient universal teaching that's centered on this thing called creation, the universal consciousness, and also the human spirit. Now, we have within us a spirit, the human spirit, that's a tiny fragment of this universal consciousness. The human spirit enters into the body of the fetus 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and the spirit form animates the entire body. It goes throughout the whole body, like a almost like a web, like a filigree. And the spirit form, it resides in the superior colliculus. And that spirit form is your spiritual consciousness. You have a spiritual consciousness that's controlled by something called the Gemut. And the Gemut is that block or factor which controls the thoughts and the feelings associated with your spirit form. Now, your spirit form is immaterial. It's fine matter. It's a part, it's like a spark from creation. It will reside in many bodies over many, many lifetimes. and you will have many material consciousnesses and many, many experiences over millions and billions of years. And there are literally 7 evolutionary steps that human societies go through. And there are human societies all over the Milky Way galaxy. The initial parent society, parent humanity in our Milky Way galaxy, are called the Lyrians. Now, the Lyrians, they were titans. Some were 20 feet tall. They were very advanced in their technologies, and they traveled to many other worlds, and they conquered other worlds. Sometimes they were warlike. They mixed with other peoples. They spread their genetics throughout the galaxy. However, humanity is the norm. I mean, if there is a planet that will support human life, eventually human life will evolve there. And there was a naturally developing Earth human on the Earth with brown skin, dark skin. And the Lyrians came here hundreds of thousands of years ago. I think it was over 300,000 years ago. They were here for the first time. They abused the native Earth humans. They committed certain crimes when they were here. Crimes against the creational natural laws. They abused the Earth humans physically and sometimes sexually. But there was kind of a codex, an agreement, an oath that was made that some of those Lyrians would stay behind because of these things they had done. And what that means is they would die on the Earth, even though they were giants, even though they were hundreds of thousands of years probably ahead of native Earth humans in terms of their evolution. They would die on the Earth, and when they would reincarnate, they would reincarnate into the bodies of the Earth people, into societies that were hundreds of thousands of years behind them in terms of evolution. And they would spend hundreds of lifetimes, maybe thousands of lifetimes, operating under something called a codex. And this codex would be an effort where they would do certain things to help the evolutions of Earth humanity, since they had interfered with Earth humanity. And there are Lyrians on the Earth today. There are Lyrian spirit forms that are living out lives where they may not be fulfilling their oaths at all. Some of them are. Some of them are in Switzerland today, filling out those oaths that they took, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. So the universe that we live in is very different than what we've been taught. It's very different than what our religions have told us. One of the fundamental laws associated with the teaching of the spirit is personal responsibility. And as you study the book, The Might of Thoughts, you will realize that more and more and more, because you're responsible for the circumstances of your life. If your circumstances are bad, then you may be causing those and may not be aware of it. Because not only do we have conscious thoughts, but we have unconscious thoughts. And those unconscious thoughts can be leading you into bad circumstances in your life. You may have lower thoughts. Sometimes they operate outside of your awareness. These lower thoughts lead to lower feelings, which lead to lower habits, which lead to poor circumstances. One lower thought that leads to a lower behavior that comes to mind is addiction. You know, we have so many addictions today. Alcoholism, smoking, drugs, sex, food, video games, pornography, sports. I mean, there are all kinds of addictions. We live a lifestyle that's left what they call the creational natural way of life. And I want to play for you a clip by a guy named Ramiel Nagel. He wrote a book called Cure Tooth Decay. And what does this have to do with the Meyer material? Well, the Meyer material talks about living a certain kind of lifestyle. And Ramiel talks about some people in Switzerland, in the Bavarian Alps, in an area called the Lohenschental Valley. And these people had perfect teeth. They had no crime. They had no need for doctors, no need for dentists. They didn't even know what a toothbrush was. And they had perfect teeth. Well, they ate a certain kind of diet. And that diet is high in vitamin A, vitamin E, vitamin K, vitamin D, all the fat-soluble vitamins. It was high in calcium. It was high in phosphorus. They had beautiful, perfect teeth that never got cavities. So, and I've covered and on previous shows how the Plarion tells us that we shouldn't have our wisdom teeth removed, that those wisdom teeth are needed to grind up certain kind of foods, and without our wisdom teeth, that can lead us to problems with our intestines, problems with our stomach, ulcers, all sorts of things. So what the Meyer information is talking about is a creational, natural way of life. And we've lost it on this earth. We're no longer living in connection with nature. We're destroying our planet all over the place. We're destroying ourselves through diets that are high in sugar, high in carbohydrates. And these sugars, they pull the minerals out of your teeth. They pull the minerals out of your bones. They cause you to be fat. They probably affect our minds in ways that we don't know. You know, sugar is one of the main breeding grounds of cancer. You know, if you eat a high sugar diet, you're asking for cancer. And it's so important that we learn to control our thoughts. And once we learn to control our thoughts, we can start to take care of these other circumstances of our life. Like finding out the right diet, eating the right diet, finding our place in life. You know, that's what the Meyer information is really about. We have our consciousness. It's like a garden. And our thoughts, they take on lives of their own. If you have negative thoughts, those thoughts can repeat. They can take on a life of their own. They'll be like weeds in your garden. They'll destroy all the other plants in your garden. Your negative repeating thoughts can destroy all of the good, positive, healthy thoughts in your consciousness. You can make yourself insane through your own thinking. On the other hand, if you will focus your thoughts, clarify your thoughts, make them less confused, make them more understandable, repeat. If you have to repeat, repeat, and repeat again, clarify your healthy thoughts, because from your thoughts come feelings. And feelings can lead to habits and circumstances in your life. And be aware that your emotion is not feelings. Emotions come suddenly, like a bolt of lightning. And your emotion can just blank out your thoughts. They can take control of your life. Don't let your emotions take control of your life. steer your thoughts, guide your thoughts. You know, there's a German word, it's called Ausartung, and it's a noun, and it means to get very badly out of control of the good human nature. You know, we have a good human nature. We really, really do. If we learn to harness our thoughts, we can capitalize on those thoughts. Your thoughts are contagious. Did you know that? So is your behavior. You can pass on bad thoughts. You can pass on bad behavior. You can negatively affect the people around you, or you can positively affect the people around you. And contagious means to spread from person to person. Your thoughts, your own thoughts, can change reality, can change the behavior patterns of people around you. You're not a victim of the circumstances of your life. You're not a victim at all. You have incredibly powerful thoughts. And one of the most healing thoughts that you can entertain is thought that focuses on creation, on nature. Because all of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation expressed visibly. And I wonder if this universal consciousness clarified its own thoughts through its many variations of on creation. And you know that every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in creation. And love is the highest principle in creation. And everything follows that principle. In absolute logic, only humans have turned away from love. Only humans must learn again what true love is. Because the infinite love of creation connects all life. Because in all life, the love of creation lies hidden. So we have to relearn this fundamental creational natural law of love. We need to relearn that there is kind of what you might call a living current of love. Now, the universal consciousness, if you open yourself up to these creational powers, these powers will stream into you. And the Meyer Information explains it as a living current of love. And there's a book, it's called Omphalan Murado, which means in the navel of life, in the Lyrian, again the Lyrian, the navel of life. And the OM tells us that the prophets would often take their students into free nature to teach them. Because the works of creation themselves express the love of creation. Let me read to you a little bit from the OM. Truly, where can one be and where can one also speak with the most exalted language, which can talk of the creational love so movingly as the works of creation themselves speak? And truly, what is all school wisdom of all human teaching compared to a single notion which comes about out of the abundance of the creations of creation, which are themselves even only a glancing reflection of the creational origin. The human must feel that nature calls to his breast. So, we need as a nation, we need as a planet, to start to understand that wisdom-conditioned love is a harmonious state of absolute connectedness with all things, in all things in which indestructible love exists without temporal limits. Genuine love is a wellspring of constancy, which is independent of a human being's age, appearance, or personality. And being able to find it in the love of creation, to sense the love of creation, it comes from a perception of reality, a respectful, concentrated observation. So let me read this to you here. So the knowledge and wisdom acquired this way, through meditative concentration on the reality of a thing, results in the experience of love. However, the ability to exercise such concentrated observation is something we earth humans rarely possess, and therefore we must develop it through hard, ongoing practice, often over a period of many years. Now, Billy, when he was beginning his public mission, when he was, probably right around 40 years old, and he had had already two extraterrestrial mentors at this point. This was in the middle 1970s, and he was starting to get contacts from a woman named Semyasi. Now, Semyasi was 344 years old at this time. She was about 5.5 feet tall. She was a slender, young, pretty woman with fair skin, sparkling blue eyes, and light blonde hair. But she suffered a life-threatening accident in the Semyasi Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidruti, which cut Billy's contacts with her short. But she was able to finish several hundred contacts, one of which was contact report 10. Where Semyasi introduced the spiritual teaching. And she said, a human bears a spirit that does not die nor sleep during the deepest sleep. It records all thoughts and notions. It informs the human whether his thoughts are correct or false if he has learned to pay attention. She said, the human spirit is the bearer of the creative realm, and every human has a spirit. She said that in the non-creational thinking human being, the material intellect, with all its given limitations, takes the highest place, and thereby as a consequence, we here on the earth have a tremendously slow development of the spirit. The spirit is the wonder of all wonders. The spirit is the part of you which never dies. Those who are rich in spirit will become an instrument through which the creation reveals the spiritual realm. There is a spiritual realm. When you die, your spirit form leaves your body and it goes into the spiritual realm. And your material consciousness comes with it. And your material consciousness goes into what's called the overall consciousness block. And in the overall consciousness block, your life's, past life's memories are processed. And then what is of positive value will eventually get absorbed into your spirit form. But our yearning lies in the joy that remains for this imperishable life, the permanent peace, this spiritual existence. You know that on the spirit side, there is deep tranquility. You'll never be disturbed on the spiritual side. You know, your spirit form cannot be harmed in any way, your spiritual consciousness. Billy had a very interesting experience on what's called the Great Spacer in Contact 31. He was taken on an incredible journey in this giant spacecraft some 10 miles in diameter. And he talked about many things in this great ship. He talked about the ceiling, being able to see the stars. Somehow they made this, some of their metals are transparent in some way. And they could literally see the stars. Or there was a projection, I don't know which. But he would talk about the great spacer jumping from star to star and how the stars would blur just for a second. And he would feel this incredible peace for just a few seconds or maybe half a minute. And then he would just be amazed at how incredible this peace is. And he described it here in Contact 31. He said, "This deep tranquility and this unbelievable peacefulness flowing through me is eternity itself, the absolute timelessness, which obviously is no longer subject to outside influences, such as restlessness, strife, and worries that trouble the consciousness. I realized suddenly that during these few seconds, I was in the eternity itself, experiencing myself as eternity, where I only exist as fine spiritual matter and am completely free of all that can influence my material life. I actually traveled to eternity for a few seconds." So Billy described this incredible experience. You know, when Semyasi was here on the earth, she described the human as being the microcosm within the macrocosm. So everything is included within the human, she said. And I think what she was talking about is this Greek Neoplatonic schema of seeing the same patterns in all levels of the cosmos, from the largest to the smallest scale. In other words, we have the spiraling arms of our galaxy and the spiraling of our own DNA at the smallest level. And we see the rotating electrons around the nucleus of the atom and the planets rotating around stars. We see these fractals, which are found in trees. Trees grow and they branch in a repeating kind of pattern. And we see the same pattern kind of thing in the human circulatory system. So there is a repeating pattern of nature, and that's why we will eventually, when we get the wisdom and the capability to truly have space travel and to visit other worlds and other star systems, we'll see worlds that have plants and trees and animals, and hopefully eventually we'll also, and I think we will, meet also people. Because all these patterns exist in nature. There are some 7 million solar systems in the Milky Way galaxy which support human life and higher human life. I think there are, the Meyer information says, 2,600 and some thousand advanced human societies. Now, the difficult thing here is that there are also different space-time configurations. And so the universe is extremely complicated, and we don't have all the answers yet. But there are 7 evolutionary steps that these human societies go through. And they start out as primitive, and eventually they learn to be rational or think in a rational way. And they enter into stage 2. Now, we're considered rational. It's in a way we don't always act that way, certainly. But just before we become into stage 3, which is intelligence, we develop the ability to be rational. Our society is moving towards an intelligent society. If we don't destroy ourselves, we'll eventually become an intelligent society. And then in stage 4, we'll enter into what's called real life. And in real life, human societies, they master genetic engineering, One of the things that's talked about in this fourth stage of human life is the actual creation of organic intelligence, sentient organic intelligence. And this is something that kind of puts the stake in religion, so to speak. Religion then will probably completely die away. And Semyase's ship has a organic intelligence. The central computer is an organic intelligence, and Semyase can communicate with that, or could communicate with her ship telepathically. So for all intents and purposes, it was a living being with a metallic hull. So in these higher stages of evolution, things happen and things are done with technology that we wouldn't be shocked by today. Now, in the fifth stage of evolutionary development, human beings start to evolve into what's called the kings of wisdom, king of wisdom. And we start to develop these incredible abilities of telepathy and telekinesis, and we've developed the ability to move things with our minds, and the material consciousness is incredibly powerful. And we've had people on the earth in the ancient past who lived on the earth. Some were benevolent. These were extraterrestrial humans. Some were very benevolent. Some were not. And those that were not used their material consciousness and their powers, their abilities, to impress the earth humans into worshiping them. And some of them blurred the idea of creation with this religious notion of this God figure. And that's why all of our ancient writings talk about the gods. Well, the Maya information says they were real. They did exist on the earth. And that religion has really stunted the evolution of the consciousness of people on the earth. And one of the other things that is stunting our evolution of our consciousness is we've lost the ability to think independently. Now we just go along with what we're told to think, or what we're influenced by society to think. But we should be learning to think independently, to make our own decisions, to look at evidence and draw conclusions from that. We should be learning to have deductive reasoning instead of just depending on groupthink from newspapers, from media. You need to make your own decisions. And you need to be not submissive. You need to take responsibility for your own life, make your own decisions, and use logic in things like deductive reasoning, for example. All men are human. All men are mortal. That's a premise. All men are mortal. If you say Socrates is a man, then you can reach the logical conclusion that Socrates is mortal. Anyway, this if one thing is true, if two things are true, then you can make a deduction about the state of the third thing. It's just a thinking skill. It's part of the might of our own thoughts. We have been so influenced by faith. Faith probably has some good benefits, but one thing that's bad is that it causes a kind of hypnosis. And we're very, very hypnotized today. We're hypnotized by the medical community. We're hypnotized by our entertainment. We're hypnotized by the mainstream media. That's why her country's falling apart. Because people are in a hypnotic state. They're walking around like zombies. They don't understand what's going on. It's the, you know, it's the poor diets. It's from so many different causes. It's from being dumbed down in the schools. So there's a real struggle now for your consciousness. Now, I've rambled on quite a long time, and I wanted to play this clip. It's by a man named Ramiel Nagel, and he's one man that thought independently. And he figured out how to cure tooth decay. And actually, he actually just followed the research of a dentist called Weston Price, who in 1915, 1920, 1930-ish, worked for the American Dental Association. And he told people, let me read this quickly. In 1915, prominent dentist Weston Price was appointed as the first research director of the National Dental Association. A few years later, the association changed its name to the American Dental Association in 1936, writing in the Journal of American Dental Association, a journal, which is still in publication today. Dr. Price painted a picture of tooth decay that was very different from the one we have today. He wrote of people who did not use toothbrushes, yet were immune to tooth decay. They had no cavities. And he says here, all groups having a liberal supply of minerals, particularly phosphorus, and a liberal supply of fat-soluble activators, had 100% immunity to dental cavities. So, there was an independent thinker named Weston Price who discovered the cure decades and decades ago to tooth decay. But today we still drill and fill and bill and use things like mercury. And people are suffering all over unnecessarily because of this. So let me switch over and we'll let Ramiel talk for quite some time since I've talked for so long. And we will learn a little bit about how to improve your health.
On her dentist when she received a huge bill. I'm shocked, she complained. This is three times what you normally charge. Yes, I know, said the dentist, but you yelled so loud you scared away two other patients. The reality is most of us, not all of us, but most of us are afraid of the dentist. And there's a good reason why. It's because your body is giving you a message. It is telling you, I do not want my teeth surgically drilled into. Let's look at what modern dentistry does. On your left, you see a tooth before drilling. The red arrow points to a black spot. That's a small cavity. The dentist drills a hole in your tooth and takes out that black spot to prevent bacteria from making holes in your teeth. You can see on the picture on the right a similar tooth after drilling. You can see that quite a large hole is typically drilled for what looks to be a small cavity. A dental student wrote me and said the following. As a dental student, I drill teeth every week. I'd rather say that I have to do this to pass my exam. When I see my patients sitting on the dental chair with their eyes closed, I feel for them because they are losing good tooth structure forever. Once the dentist places a drill in your teeth, there's really not much hope of restoring what was drilled away. After drilling comes the next stage, filling. One of the most popular composite fillings has reacted negatively to over 90% of the people. On average, 50% of the people have immune system reactions to plastic composites. And kind of in the corner of the picture there, you can see mercury fillings, which, as you hopefully know, those are dangerous and toxic. First there's drilling, then there's filling. What comes next? Billing. And that's probably an accurate estimate there of what a dental treatment costs. So the question I have for you is, does drilling, filling, and billing, is that a successful treatment paradigm? Well, let's look at the evidence. The average modern filling material, composite or mercury, lasts on average 5 to 12 years. Amalgam and gold fillings are not bonded to the tooth. So there's a piece of metal in the tooth and it's just floating there. What happens is the modern system of dentistry, it's not a long-term solution because after 5 to 12 years, you're going to have a new dental treatment in place. And what most dentists don't tell you, but it is common knowledge, is that when there's a mercury filling placed in the tooth, those are the teeth that later need crowns and root canals. And the reason is because there's so much stress put on the tooth from having a hole drilled in it and then metal placed in it that the tooth over time becomes weak and damaged. So the answer to the question is no, modern dentistry does not cure cavities. It's simply a temporary treatment for a significant problem. Another problem with modern dentistry is what is called extension for prevention. A dentist by the name of G.V. Black, who pioneered modern mercury fillings, found out that if you drill a bigger hole and create a wedge shape in the tooth, that the mercury filling lasts longer. But the problem is that many dentists are trained to drill out much more tooth material than is actually decayed. So modern dentistry is a surgical form of treating tooth cavities that removes a lot of our natural tooth. So when I ask you, are you afraid of the dentist? Or you might feel afraid of going to the dentist. The reason is because your body knows that something wrong is about to happen. Now, dentistry is focused on removing bacteria as a means to cure cavities. Let's look at the stages of modern dentistry. First, they tell you to brush to remove the bacteria. When that fails, you must use mouthwash. Some of the mouthwash is toxic, fluoride rinses, for example. And when that fails, the bacteria have infested too deeply in your tooth. So the dentist says, okay, you know what? The only solution for you is to drill the bacteria out, which we learned about just with the drilling and filling and billing model. When the drilling, filling, and billing model fails, then you see in that next picture, what's required for the tooth is a root canal where they try to take out the infection of the tooth by removing the inside, the pulp, the nerve, the blood supply of the tooth, and pulling it out and putting a synthetic material in there, all to remove the bacteria. When root canals fail, what's left is an implant. Maybe if we look at these bacteria at a higher magnification, we can see what the issue is. Streptococcus mutans is the bacteria blamed for tooth cavities. Look at those spheres. Do these spheres, are they really the cause of all of our problems? Maybe if we look at them at a higher magnification, even more closely, we can finally get to the root of what's causing hundreds of millions of people all over the world to suffer from the most dreaded disease, tooth cavities. The bacteria that our modern dentistry is searching for is just an illusion. And I will show you now how the germ theory is not realistic. We are blaming all our problems on these evil bacteria rather than looking for where the real cause and real problems lie. The American Dental Association promotes the theories of attacking bacteria to end the plague of tooth cavities. Here's what it says on their website in 2010. When you eat or drink foods containing sugars or starches, the bacteria in plaque produce acids that attack tooth enamel. After many such attacks, a cavity forms. The blame is the bacteria. The modern theory of tooth cavities was invented by a dentist by the name of W.D. Miller around 1882. What Dr. Miller did is he put a tooth in a test tube and he mixed it with saliva and some bread or some carbohydrate. And over a period of time, he showed that a tooth in a test tube would decay. And he showed that bacteria are a process of decay. But what Dr. Miller also found out was that the perfect tooth would resist indefinitely acid. In other words, teeth are perfect for a long period of time. Something happens, and then all of a sudden they become susceptible to tooth decay. So what's missing in the 2010 theory from the American Dental Association is, yes, plaque, sticky foods, and so forth can contribute to decay, but a perfect tooth resists indefinitely the acid. In other words, if your tooth is strong and healthy, that theory of decay from the American Dental Association that dentists are taught to believe, that the media believes, is false. Let me tell you what a real theory on tooth decay is. Let me tell you about a scientifically accurate theory on tooth decay that people don't know about. It relates to the dentinal fluid transport. Each tube contains 3 miles of microscopic tubes. In those tubes, a type of fluid, nutrient-rich fluid, flows. When our glands and body are healthy, there's a hormonal signal from the pituitary gland to glands in our jaws, the parotid gland, to tell our teeth to remineralize or demineralize. Our body is paying attention to its chemistry and telling our teeth to remineralize or demineralize. There's nothing to do with bacteria in this biochemical hormonal model. This model has been proven accurate by a dentist named Ralph Steinman. In other words, it's not that bacteria have control over tooth cavities, and it's not what bacteria eat that matter. It's what we eat that matters, because our body is telling our teeth to decay or not decay, to remineralize teeth or demineralize teeth. Let's look at how the modern system of dentistry has affected the modern population. This chart shows the percent of population with tooth cavities by age. As you see, in general, the older people get, the more and more.
So we'll get back to this at a later date. It's really interesting stuff. It's extremely important to learn about this. Eat a diet that's high. Eat organ meat, hearts, livers. Don't eat any more breads, any kinds of sugars, any kinds of pastas. Drink a lot of whole milk. Raw's even better if you can get it. Take fermented cod liver oil. Anyway, that kind of diet, cheese, will literally heal your cavities. You won't have to have drilling. Again, back to the Meyer material, it's a natural creational model. It's the way we were designed. It's working with nature's systems. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great week.